Well, have an amazing Tuesday.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen swept into Kyiv on Monday on a surprise visit to promote U.S. economic aid that is bolstering Ukraine's war effort. Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom reports.
Yellen's visit comes a week after U.S. President Joe Biden staged his own unannounced trip to Kyiv and promised $500 million in additional military aid for Ukraine and new sanctions on Russia announced days later, including effectively banning U.S. imports of Russian aluminum. Yellen visited Kyiv on her way back to Washington from a G20 finance leaders meeting in India, where she urged counterparts to boost economic aid to Ukraine and insisted that G20 ministers issue a strong condemnation of Russia's invasion.
Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced Monday the Northern Ireland Protocol, which had been a source of tension since Britain left the EU, had been changed following meetings between Britain and the bloc.
Today's agreement delivers smooth-flowing trade within the whole United Kingdom, protects Northern Ireland's place in our union, and safeguards sovereignty for the people of Northern Ireland.
Sunak made the announcement alongside European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in Windsor, where he dubbed the new agreement the Windsor Framework. President Emmanuel Macron on Monday announced a noticeable reduction of French troop presence in Africa, where anti-French sentiment is running high in some former colonies. He was speaking in Paris ahead of a four-nation tour of Central African countries from Wednesday, as France seeks to counter growing Chinese and Russian influence in the region. Follow us on the VOA mobile app or online at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Among the worst hit by February 6th earthquakes in Syria is the rebel-controlled Idlib province, where access is limited to aid group workers who are warning time is running out to avoid a famine. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
International aid is arriving to meet the growing humanitarian crisis. Those efforts are assisted by the United Nations Security Council, allowing for 3 months the opening of two extra border gates with Turkey. But aid groups warn 3 months are not enough. Quake survivors, many of them now homeless and destitute, are aware their fate depends on any international help that arrives and whether the extra border gates stay open. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Mexico's president lashed out Monday at demonstrators who protested cuts to election funding over the weekend, belittling their concerns about threats to democracy and dashing any hopes that he would try to ease rising political tensions. President Andres Manuel López Obrador seemed to revel in the conflict, hurling insults at the tens of thousands of people who demonstrated in Mexico City's main plaza, calling them thieves and allies of drug traffickers. A U.S. comics distributor says it will no longer work with Dilbert creator Scott Adams because of recent comments he made about race. AP correspondent Margie Zarletta reports.
The heads of Andrews McMeel say in a statement, the company believes in free speech, but it will not support commentary rooted in hate. That's why it's severing its relationship with Dilbert. Among the things Scott Adams, who is white, has said on his YouTube show is that he will no longer help black Americans and repeatedly referred to people who are black as members of a hate group. He also advised that white people get away from black people. The Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, and the San Antonio Express News are among the newspapers dropping Dilbert. Adams has defended himself on social media against those he says hate him and are canceling him. I'm Archie Zarletta.
Hong Kong is scrapping its mask mandate from Wednesday, Chief Executive John Lee announced, ending the financial hub's last major COVID curb as it seeks to emerge from the pandemic. The city was one of the last places in the world to require face coverings in virtually all public settings, with everyone over the age of two required to wear one or face a fine of up to 10,000 Hong Kong dollars. Forest fires raged on in Cuba's eastern region on Monday, inching toward more populated ground more than a week after sparking near a national park. More than 2,000 hectares of forest, including plantations and coffee crops, have been devoured by the flames, authorities said, as firefighters, park employees, and soldiers battled the blaze. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, February 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. Treasury Chief restates commitment to Ukraine as U.S. Chief decries rights violations by Russia.
The Russian invasion of the Ukraine has triggered the most massive violations of human rights we are living today. It has unleashed widespread deaths, destruction, and displacement.
International observers and ECOWAS criticize Nigeria's election as results trickle in.
Late arrival of polling officials, voting materials, and in some cases, the delivery of wrong materials at polling stations across the country.
And Britain reaches a deal with the European Union over a long-running dispute over Northern Ireland. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says her first visit to Kyiv underscores Washington's commitment to continuing its economic support for the country. Yellen arrived in the Ukrainian capital Monday amid the din of air raid sirens. She met with Ukraine's top officials and President Volodymyr Zelensky, laid flowers for fallen soldiers, visited a damaged school and met Ukrainian landmine removal experts. Yellen said the U.S. has provided about $50 billion in security, economic and humanitarian assistance to Ukraine since the start of Russia's war. The U.S. official repeated several times that Washington will stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes. At least for now, the United States is declining to send F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine. But as VOA's Veronica Badderas-Inglesias reports, there are some lawmakers in Congress who plan to push the White House to change its position.
With Soviet-era Grad rockets, Ukrainian soldiers continued their efforts over the weekend to recover territory lost to the Russian army in Kharkiv. While Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky praised a new round of sanctions announced Saturday by the European Union against Moscow, he also appealed for more international support.
We are capable of putting an end to the Russian aggression this year.
The possibility of the Ukrainians boosting their defense systems with U.S. F-16 jets and long-range artillery is not currently being contemplated, said U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on ABC's This Week.
In this phase, the critical element is ground maneuver capability, and that means tanks, armored personnel carriers, infantry fighting vehicles, and the F-16 question is a question for later.
Some legislators, however, aim to do more now. Republican Representative Michael McCaul told ABC.
We can certainly write into our appropriations bills prioritizing weapon systems. We intend to do that. Well, I think with enough pressure from Congress on both sides of the aisle, we can get into Ukraine what they really need to win this fight.
But the U.S. can't do it alone, and the Biden administration will need European allies to step up their contributions, Republican Senator Dan Sullivan stressed on NBC's Meet the Press.
They've had a commitment to spend at a minimum, and it should be a floor, not a ceiling, 2% of their GDP on defense. The vast majority of the NATO allies that we have don't do that.
On the diplomatic front, French President Emmanuel Macron announced he'll visit China in April to discuss Beijing's peace brokering efforts. The United States also wants to keep the lines of communication open, said National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on NBC. But no high-level talks are planned between President Joe Biden and his counterpart Xi Jinping.
Nothing scheduled at the moment, though I anticipate the two leaders will speak at some point in the not-too-distant future.
He emphasized that military communication channels with China are necessary to avoid escalation, surprises, and mistakes. Veronica Valderas-Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Russia's war of aggression took center stage at the opening of the UN Human Rights Council's five-and-a-half-week session, the longest meeting ever held. Lisa Schneier reports for VOA from Geneva.
As he kicked off this historically long and politically charged conference, Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the carnage unleashed by Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
The Russian invasion of the Ukraine has triggered the most massive violations of human rights we are living today. It has unleashed widespread deaths, destruction, and displacement. Attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure have caused many casualties and terrible suffering.
He warned the erosion of human rights around the world has caused progress made in human development to stall and in many cases to be reversed. He notes extreme poverty and hunger are rising around the world for the first time in decades.
A record 100 million people have been forced to flee by violence, conflict, and human rights violations. Every day brings new evidence of human rights violations, from summary executions and torture to enforced disappearance and sexual violence.
The president of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Felix Tshisekedi, headed a list of 46 dignitaries scheduled to speak during the day's high-level segment. He told the council the main challenge facing his country was the cycle of violence and looting of natural resources by terrorists and armed groups since 1994, the year of the Rwandan genocide. He said some 150 groups, including the M23 rebels, mainly operate in the provinces of Ituri, Maniema, North Kivu, and Tanganyika. He spoke through an interpreter.
It is no secret to anyone that they are supported, armed, by some states of the region, such as Rwanda, and by foreign financial sectors. For 30 years, the Democratic Republic of Congo has been the theater of the most abominable human atrocities.
Rwanda has denied accusations that it has supported the M23 group in eastern DRC. However, United Nations observers and human rights groups have said there is evidence of Rwandan backing for the M23. Tshisekedi said he is in consultations with 53 armed groups within the context of the Nairobi peace process. He said the consultations, which aim to reintegrate the militias into national life, do not include the M23 rebels or the group known as CODECO. The 52nd regular session of the Human Rights Council includes 4 days of speeches by top diplomats and national leaders. The agenda this year includes debate on conditions in Ethiopia, Afghanistan, Syria, and Israel. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. And the International Federation of Journalists has suspended, with immediate effect, the Russian Union of Journalists over its action since Russia's invasion of Ukraine and its role in annexed Ukrainian territories. VOA's Laurie London speaks with IFJ Deputy General Secretary Jeremy Deer.
It was a decision made as a result of numerous actions, but most especially the decision by the Russian Union of Journalists to establish 4 new branches of their union in the Ukrainian territories that were annexed by the Russian government. And this stepped over a line for us where many of our unions are often involved in situations of war or conflict or regional disputes, but we expect that they will maintain professional solidarity, so that they will help any journalist who is in trouble, that they will not take the political position of their governments, but that they will remain independent and professional. And by establishing these 4 branches and calling them branches of Russian territory, it was felt that the Russian Union of Journalists had crossed that line and had clearly taken a position in support of the invasion of Ukraine, and that was simply unacceptable for our executive.
The head of Russia's journalist union told state media in Russia, though, that this violates the IFJ's charter. Is that, how do you respond to that?
I'm sure he would say that, but we're quite clear that we've acted according to the rules of the Federation, that there was a complaint that they no longer met the criteria for being members, that complaint was investigated by the General Secretary, Secretary and that more than two-thirds of the Executive Committee supported a decision to suspend the union. Under our rules, that union have a right to appeal to our global Congress to reverse that decision, but that doesn't take place until 2026. In the meantime, they are suspended. But I don't think there is any way that they can say that they have stuck to our rules, that they have upheld our principles and our values of media freedom since the invasion started.
That's IFJ Deputy Secretary General Jeremy Deer speaking with VOA's Laurie London. The United Nations Refugee Agency says more than 5 million Syrians may have been left homeless by earthquakes that struck the region on February 6th. Among the worst hit is the rebel-controlled Idlib province, where access is limited to aid groups and workers who are warning time is running out to avoid farming. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Earthquake survivors are now camping outside the Jindirish city in the rebel-controlled Idlib province. The fear and shock brought on by the February 6th quakes are now giving way to hunger, cold and desperation. Suhail al-Hussein Mohammed and her family have nothing after their house in Jindirish was destroyed. Now they survive on the little aid they receive.
We were only given a cloth to sleep on and today's meal and lunch, and four bags of coal for heating. But personally, our situation is very difficult. There are no diapers for children, there is no gas for cooking, and there is no good support yet. And there are things that can't be talked about. I mean, personally, I need a lot of things. Authorities say the quake destroyed as much as a third of Jindirish, with many other buildings barely standing. The city's infrastructure is in tatters. Even basic staples like bread are in painfully short supply. Mohammed Hafa heads the Jindirish local council. He says civilians are still living in a state of shock, trying to get out of this situation. All businesses have stopped. There were seven bakeries that fed the city and the district with bread. And today we only have one oven with partial capacity. Even the water and sewage networks are not in service. This will certainly lead to an increase in diseases, and we need more. International aid is arriving to meet the growing humanitarian crisis. Those efforts are assisted by the United Nations Security Council, allowing for 3 months the opening of two extra border gates with Turkey. But aid groups warn 3 months are not enough. Yaksan Shishak is the co-founder of the Maram Foundation, an aid agency working in Syria.
We cannot do support people in early recovery within this short time. So we really squeezed. We have very small window to work. At the same time, we don't have enough supply because the supply line is almost, I will not say stopped, it's very slow because the whole area is damaged.
Quake survivors, many of them now homeless and destitute, are aware their fate depends on any international help that arrives and whether the extra border gates stay open. So says Omar Mohammed Ma'arawi, who now lives in a tent city. He says the situation is more than tragic at the moment, and if the support stops, the situation will be more than catastrophic, especially in these circumstances. I ask the whole world to be more humane to the Syrian people, especially since we are going through such difficult circumstances. International aid groups and the United Nations are rushing aid into the Syrian rebel-controlled region, aware they're in a race against time as hunger and disease threaten those who survive the deadly quakes. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The British government says it has reached a deal with the European Union to resolve their long-running trade dispute over Northern Ireland. Associated Press correspondent Charles de la Desma reports.
Together, we have changed the original protocol and are today announcing the new Windsor framework.
Speaking alongside EU leader Ursula von der Leyen in Windsor, Sunak says the two sides had agreed change to remove onerous customs checks on goods moving to Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK.
This new framework will allow us to begin a new chapter. It provides for long-lasting solutions that both of us are confident will work for all people and businesses in Northern Ireland.
Von der Leyen says the agreement has restored UK-EU relations to the right footing. I'm Charles de la Desma.
In In other news, World Cup winner Lionel Messi has won FIFA Best Men's Player Award for 2022. Spain's Alexia Putellas won the FIFA's Best Women Player for the second straight time. Messi won the voting over Kylian Mbappe and Karim Benzema. Putellas won the women's voting over Alex Morgan of the United States and England's Beth Mead. Argentina coach Lionel Scaloni had been voted FIFA's Men Coach of the Year after leading his team to the World Cup title in December. The Women's Coach Award went to Serena Wigman, who led England to the title at the Women's European Championship. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Rescuers recovered three more bodies on Monday, a day after a wooden sailboat carrying migrants to Europe smashed onto rocks in stormy weather off southern Italy, bringing the dead toll to 62. This report is produced by Chris Dingham of Reuters.
Rescuers trolling the Mediterranean recovered more bodies on Monday, a day after a wooden sailboat carrying migrants to Europe shipwrecked off of Italy's southern coast. Debris lined the beach after the vessel crashed into rocks in stormy weather on Sunday, leaving scores dead, including more than a dozen children. Pakistan's prime minister said more than two dozen Pakistanis were believed to have been among the boat's passengers. Rescuers said many Afghanis and some Iranians had also been aboard. Local authorities said 80 people survived the shipwreck, but as many as 200 may have been aboard the vessel when it left from Turkey, suggesting many more passengers are missing. Locals left flowers and candles on metal railings outside a sports hall where dozens of coffins were laid out ahead of an eventual funeral. The shipwreck has reignited a debate on migration in Europe and Italy, where the recently elected right-wing government's tough new laws for migrant rescue charities have drawn criticism from the United Nations and others. The UN Missing Migrants Project has registered more than 20,000 deaths and disappearances in the Mediterranean since 2014, including more than 220 just this year, making it the most dangerous migrant route in the world.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. International experts and the European Community of West African States, ECOWAS, said on Monday that the Independent National Electoral Commission in Nigeria failed in a number of its promises, including late and long delivery of materials to polling units. This as outside challenger Peter Obi snatched Lagos State from his former governor, Bola Tinubu. The tally of results, however, suggests the latter is well ahead in other areas. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
That result on Monday is a major boost for the Labour Party's Obi, whose campaign has galvanised young and frustrated Nigerians. He's shaken up the country's politics by challenging candidates from two movements that have alternated power since the end of military rule in 1999. Obi got 582,454 votes in Lagos State, ahead of 572,606 for Bola Tinubu, a former governor of the state known as the Godfather of Lagos. However, a Reuters tally of Electoral Commission results suggested Tinubu was well ahead in other areas, though around two-thirds of states are yet to declare. The Lagos result comes 2 days after an election that has been marred by delays and with all three parties complaining of irregularities. Obi's Labour Party has criticised the electoral body for the failure, in many places, to immediately upload results directly from each polling unit to its website. That was a promise it had made to guarantee transparency. Concerns over the delays could also be found on the streets of Awka, capital of the southeastern Anambra state, among residents like tricycle driver Victor Boniface.
We are afraid here because of the way they are trying to do the result. But we never hear the result for now, and we are still waiting for the result.
The Electoral Commission has said it takes full responsibility for the problems and regrets the distress that they have caused the candidates, political parties and the electorate. The European Union's observer mission said on Monday that the Commission had lacked efficient planning in critical stages and effective public communication. That, it said, had reduced trust in the process. The election has also seen reports of violence and intimidation, though not on the scale of previous polls. To become president, a candidate needs to get more votes than any other, as well as a quarter of the votes in at least 24 out of 36 states.
That's David Doyle of Reuters.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news. Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week, for the 5-minute VOA newscast. We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the world. Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's Hit Countdown. Each week, I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC right here on VOA 1.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices, our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Gene Rofo in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been 2 years since Burma's military seized power from a democratically elected government and violently disrupted the country's hard-fought, decades-long democratic progress. Since then, the military regime has plunged the country into political, economic, and humanitarian disaster and continues to wage a brutal campaign against the Burmese people. Over 3,000 have been killed, nearly 17,000 detained, and more than 1.5 million displaced. On February 1st, the regime announced it will extend the state of emergency in the country for at least 6 months, thereby ensuring its grip on power and delaying any possibility of holding free or fair elections. State Department spokesperson Ned Price denounced the regime's decision, saying it will prolong the military's illegitimate rule and the suffering it inflicts on the country. He deplored the regime's plan for so-called elections, which will not be representative of the country's people. At a press briefing, State Department counselor Derek Shaw noted that any election the regime might have will have no chance of being free or fair, given that the regime has imprisoned or intimidated nearly all potential contenders. He emphasized the determination of the United States to deny the regime international legitimacy and, in coordination with allies, to continue to impose on it political and economic costs. To that end, on January 31st, the United States announced additional sanctions on 6 Burmese individuals and 3 entities, including the senior leadership of the Myanmar Oil and Gas Enterprise, arms dealers, regime leaders, and their business cronies. Also sanctioned was the Union Election Commission, which the regime has manipulated to advance its flawed elections. In a statement, Secretary of State Antony Blinken noted that to date, the U.S. has sanctioned 80 individuals and 32 entities to deprive the regime of the means to perpetrate its violence and to promote the democratic aspirations of Burma's people. He made clear that in addition to increasing costs on the regime, the United States will also continue to provide critical humanitarian aid to the Burmese people and will vigorously support the pro-democracy movement in Burma. As State Councillor Charlotte said, the United States will not waver from its support for the people of Burma as they bravely voice their aspirations for democracy, for the rule of law, for justice, and the respect of human rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.